Somurluk yahane tümiran tasya gyanam jana shabakaya chakshurun viditam dina tasma shri kudaya. Thank you all very much for kindly coming this afternoon and filling the hall. The first requirement for a leader is that he should understand who he is. We may think, well, that's a very easy thing, but practically the whole world is an illusion about who they are. I'm thinking I'm American, or I'm thinking that I'm Indian, or that I'm British, or that I'm Egyptian. I'm thinking that I'm white, or I'm black, or I'm young, or I'm old. I'm short, or I'm tall. I'm thin, or I'm fat. I'm thinking I'm this body. I think in terms of this body as being myself. You ask me who I am, I say I'm American, I'm so many years old, I'm a member of this family, but all I'm talking about is this body. Because the body is born in America, I say I'm an American. Because the body was born so many years ago, I say I'm so many years old. Because I'm born in a certain community, I say I'm a member of this community. So the first understanding in the science of self-realization is that I'm not this body. I'm not this body. Even we say this body, we're changing bodies. Every one of us had a little child's body. That body is gone. We can't bring it back, even if we wanted to. Now, you all have young bodies, my body's older. You'll also leave behind this young body and you'll get an old body. So, the body is changing. You change your body from a child's body to a young person's body to an old person's body, but you're the same person. You're the same person. You say, I was jumping up and down as a child. I was studying as a student. Then I did this, then I did that. But you're the same I. But your body is changing all the time. So there's a difference between the two. One is temporary. This body is temporary. And you're permanent. Through all these changes of body, you've been this. So that means there's two different things, the body and the self. And self-realization begins with understanding that I'm not this body. Then what am I? If I think about it, I'll understand that I'm the conscious person within the body. I say my body. So I'm the person who's thinking about this body. I'm the person who's observing that this body changed from this one to this one to this one. So the body, you can say, is matter. You could break it down and say this much potassium, this much nitrogen, this much water, this much of this, this much of that. You could break it all down into its material elements, couldn't you? But consciousness is different. Consciousness can't be cut, can't be burned, can't be blown away, can't be dried up, can't be placed under a microscope. Because it's something completely different. When we speak of consciousness, consciousness can also be called spirit, can also be called the soul. In Sanskrit, the word is Atma. There are a lot of different names. But however, whichever name you use, there are two things. There's the body, and there's the person within the body. The body is like a set of clothes. I put on, now you're wearing this maroon colored dress, tomorrow you'll wear a different dress, another dress. So the clothes are changing, but you're the same person. So this body is like a set of clothes. It changes, and finally it wears out altogether, and it's gone. Now, the Vedic teachings, we have, by the way, a copy of our Bhagavad Gita here. Not that, the actual book. The books from which we're getting our information, the books that we're studying, trace things this way. That we've changed our body from the body of a child to the body of a young person. Yes, this is good. This is called Bhagavad Gita. I'm speaking from this book. We've changed from the body of a child to the body of a young person to the body of an old person. Now what happens? The body is finished, right? After old age comes death. You all know. But then what is that death? Death means another change of body. As I've changed from the young body to the child body, to the young body, to the old body, now death means again I go to the next body. Again I go to the next body. Because the soul doesn't die, but it has to go somewhere. Just like now you're in this hall. So I understand, previously you were someplace else, afterwards you'll go someplace else. It's not that you only exist as long as the hall exists. You were someplace else, you'll go someplace else. I'm speaking of a future life, there was also a past life. Have you ever considered, why is one person born in a rich family, another person in a poor family? Have you ever asked yourself that? Why is one person born very intelligent? You're never smart from the beginning. And another person is kind of slow and dull. Why is one person born with, name anything, very good looking, and someone else born not so good looking? Why is some person born in this part of the world? Why is some person born in that part of the world? Do you have any explanation? No. So in this Bhagavad Gita, in our book, there's an explanation. That this is not our first life. We had a life before this one, and a life before that one. And in that life, and the one before it, and the one before it, we did so many things. We had so many thoughts, so many desires, so many aspirations. And that has carried us to our next body, to our next life. Just like now, you're in school. Some of you must be very serious students, really just studying over time, totally fixed on your studies. And maybe there might be one or two among you who are sort of not very serious about your studies. So those who are very serious, in their next, when they graduate, they'll get good jobs, they'll be very capable in their field, they'll make further advancement, maybe they'll go on to still higher studies. And those who, you know, while they're in school, they were more interested in parties and other things, maybe they won't do so well. Right? It's according to what we do while we're here in school that our life after school is determined or set. If I live, while I'm young, if I live a healthy life, then I may be healthy in my old age. If I burn myself out when I'm young, then I'll be finished when I'm old. What we do now has an effect on what happens to us later. I go to school, I get a good job. I rob a bank, I go to jail. So according to what we've done in our previous life, according to the consciousness that we've cultivated in our previous life, now we've all landed here in this life. In different circumstances, different people, different families, different advantages, different disadvantages, maybe some hidden advantages, some things that won't come out till later. And in this life, we're preparing for the next life. So a real leader, first of all, is a person who has this understanding. He doesn't think that the people he's leading live for 30 years or 50 years or 80 or 100 years. He doesn't think that they're white or they're black. He doesn't think that they're Americans or Kenyans or this or that. He knows that all of these people are eternal living beings. And they're all traveling through this lifetime, from a previous lifetime, going to the next lifetime. He has that understanding. He has to know what is what. If I'm in the dark, where am I going to lead anyone? The first thing for a leader is vision. A leader should be capable. First of all, a leader should be able to see things clearly. Without clear vision, I can't be a leader. If I'm an illusion, if I'm confused, if I don't know what's what, how can I be a leader? I'll be one of those leaders who's blind and leads the other blind men into a ditch. So this is the first point of leadership. I should understand that everyone is an eternal living being. That should be the first point. And I should understand the problems of the people who I'm leading. Right? Every leader finds himself faced with problems, with challenges for the people he's leading. Am I right? But generally the leaders are seeing only the most superficial problems. They're seeing only a little slice of a problem. They see that there's an economic problem. Or they see that there's a health problem. Or they see that there's a political problem. Or they see that there's a social problem. We see, and there are. There's so many political problems, social problems, economic problems, ecological problems. There's actually problems upon problems upon problems. You look at it from that angle of vision, the whole world is filled with problems. But there are four big problems. Four problems that are at the root of all the other problems. First problem is death. And we think that cancer is a problem, or AIDS is a problem, or malaria is a problem. The big problem is death. Right? That's the first problem. No one wants to die. And everyone has to die. That's problem number one. Problem number two is old age. No one wants to get old and fall apart. You're all young people, you like being young. If I offered you, just take this pill and you'll be 120 years old, you would all say thank you very much. You can take it yourself. No one wants to become old and suffer. And the next problem is birth. birth. Because after death comes birth. For one who's born, death is certain. Right? No one can say it's not. That, no, this person will be born, but he won't die. We know that if a person's been born, that person's going to die. And we take information from this Bhagavad Gita that a person who dies is going to be born again. Just as if I leave this room, I'm going to go to some other room. If I came into this room, I came from some other room. If I'm wearing this clothing, I was wearing some other clothing. And tomorrow I'll wear different clothes. So it's sure that one who's born is going to die. And the next problem is, we don't know what happens after we die, but the Bhagavad Gita says, again, taking birth. That's the next problem. Old age, death, rebirth, and disease. No one wants disease. But the whole world, everyone must get diseased. Everyone must get diseased. And we may solve a particular disease. They used to have bubonic plague. We don't get plague anymore. They solved that. But instead we get cancer, we get AIDS. So disease is always there. Well, these are the four major problems. Birth, death, disease, and old age. And those problems have to be solved. Suppose you solve my economic problem. Does it solve those other problems? No. I get some money. Maybe I build a nice house, I get a nice car, I have so many things. But then death comes and I have to get out. Or a disease comes and I can't enjoy the things that I've gotten. Or old age comes and again I can't. So these are the four defects of this material world that every one of us is challenged by, everyone is facing. And the real leader is not just the person who addresses a particular disease, a particular economic, social, or political problem, but it's a person who sees the larger picture, who sees that these are the real problems that every one of us has to face. Then, the next question is, what is my purpose here in this world? If I'm a leader, I have to have a purpose to lead people to achieve, right? If I'm a political leader, maybe I want to overthrow the government, or I want to bring in social equality, or I want to have lower taxes or higher standard of living. I have some purpose that I want to achieve. A leader without a purpose can't be a leader. So then the question should be, what is the purpose of our society? What should be the purpose of whatever I'm leading? If I'm the leader of a family, or I'm the leader of a company, or I'm the leader of a nation, or I'm an international leader, what should be our purpose? What do we want to achieve? And again, the leaders of the world, so often the leaders of the world have ulterior purposes. Their purpose is to get elected and lie to you. To take the post and pick your pocket. To cheat. There are so many leaders whose only purpose is to exploit. To make some promises. To speak some nice sounding words. To tell people what they want to hear. To say something inspiring. And to loot. to take, grab as much money as they can and then go on to, maybe not go on, stay and sit on that money or else go live happily ever after. So some leaders are just outright cheaters. So many. But even those who are sincere, those who are honest, those who actually care about the welfare of others, we have to ask, what is their purpose? And generally, even if it's a great purpose, it's a small purpose. It's a political purpose, it's a social purpose, it's an economic purpose, it's a scientific purpose. But it doesn't address our underlying problems. What is that underlying problem? I've already spoken about symptoms of that underlying problem. But the underlying bad is that I'm trying to do something that I'm not meant for. I'm trying to do something that I'm not meant for. What is that? I'm trying to control and enjoy the resources of this world. And instead of controlling them, instead of enjoying them, I'm getting entangled in greater and greater complexity and perplexity. I'm getting entangled in bigger and bigger problems. To solve one problem, I do something, and it causes another problem. I try to exploit the resources of the material energy, the resources of this world, but I do it at your expense, and that causes a problem. Or you do it at his expense, and that causes a problem. Actually, all of us are trying to enjoy and control the resources of this world. We're all competing. As individuals, we're competing for some money, competing for some jobs. As nations, we're competing for some territory or some resources. We're competing for oil, or we're competing for gold, or we're competing for diamonds. And fighting over those things. Because I want it. I want that job, I want that money, I want that gold, I want whatever it is. Why? So that I can enjoy. But that's not actually the position of the living being. We're not controllers, we're controlled. I'm controlled by the laws of nature. I can't say, the rest of you can get old, I'm not going to get old. All of you guys can die, I'm not going to die. You guys can get diseased, I'm not going to get diseased. I'm under control, I have to get old. I can't say no. In so many ways I'm controlled. I'm controlled by the laws of nature. I can't fly. I might say, birds can fly, let me fly. I can't fly. I might think that I would like to pick something up, which is very heavy. I'm controlled. I'm a small guy. With some big guy, I don't have to pick it up. I'm conditioned. Conditioned means I'm limited by this body. I'm limited by this body. So I think I'm limited by my mind also, because my mind is not all-powerful. I think that I'm controlling. I have a plan for enjoying. But the world is made in such a way, nature is made in such a way, that the more I try to enjoy, the more I wind up suffering. And so the world gets into bigger and bigger problems. On a national level, international level, individual level. That's just the way the world is. Why? Because we're not the controllers, we're not the enjoyers. I can't say, this is my land. Because it was here before I came, it will be here after I'm gone. How is it mine? I say, this is my money. That before it was your money, later it will be his money. How is it mine? Even I say, my body. Even that I can't hold on to. But nothing is mine. Then everything actually belongs to God. That's a simple thing. I can't say it's mine. God is the owner of everything. And I'm trying to enjoy God's property as if it were my own. And I'm competing with others for that enjoyment. Under the illusion that I'm white, or I'm black, or I'm old, or I'm young, or I'm Smith, or I'm Jones, I have this project for controlling and enjoying, and it doesn't work. So the real leader is the person who has that understanding. The real leaders of the world are the great spiritual leaders of the world. The people who are seeing not just to a particular social or economic problem or psychological problem, but who see the real problem of every living being. Who sees that every one of us is by nature spiritual, a soul, wandering in this material world. You see that we're stuck in exploiting the resources of the material energy, and will bring us to spiritual understanding and spiritual freedom. These are the really great leaders of the world. The so-called great leaders, you know, political leaders, economic leaders, they're forgotten after 50 years, 100 years, 300 years. They're forgotten. Because their great accomplishments are very, very small. But a person who gives spiritual knowledge by which one can get out of this material entanglement, that's the real leader. And everyone can become such a leader by spiritual understanding. A spiritual understanding. So we spoke about a science of spiritual realization, science of self-realization. And we understood the first thing is to understand what the self is. Or the first thing is to understand what it's not, that I'm not this body. And the next thing is to understand that I'm part of God. God is the supreme whole. Huh? And we're all parts of God. And what is the business of the part? What's the function of the part? It's to serve the whole, isn't it? My hand is part of my body. So what is the function of that hand? It's to serve the whole body. If the hand thinks, I'm going to be independent, I don't need the rest of the body, I'm just going to be happy on my own. Does it work? But when the hand thinks, I'm going to put food in the stomach, I'm not going to keep it in my palm, I'm going to put it in the stomach and let the whole body be happy, then the hand is in its natural, healthy condition. So the real identity of every living being is that he's a servant of God. Just as the hand is a servant of the whole body, every living being is a servant of God. It's not a question of this religion or that religion. You may be Christian, you may be Muslim, you may be Hindu, you may be something else. That's another question. just as someone may be American, someone may be Kenyan, someone may be Indian, someone may be Egyptian. That can change. The American can become British. The British can become Kenyan. A Christian can become a Muslim. A Muslim can become a Christian. But no one can change his eternal identity. No one can actually genuinely say, validly say, I'm not a servant. I'm always a servant. I'm a servant of my family, I'm a servant of my country, I'm a servant of my friends, I'm a servant of my boss, I'm a servant of my what have you. My nature is to serve. But now I'm serving my country, my boss, my family. And that's temporary. I'm temporarily the servant of a particular boss, a particular family, a particular country. Not forever. But my eternal identity, my eternal service, is service to God. That's our real business in life. But because of bad leadership, because of unenlightened leadership, because of leadership from people who don't understand the science of self-realization, we're being directed towards something else, towards something small, towards something temporary, to something that ignores our real problems in life or our real purpose in life. The real purpose is to get out of this material entanglement and revive our eternal relationship with God. God has different names. You can say Jehovah, Allah, Krishna, there's so many names. That doesn't matter. But there's one supreme God, everyone is part of God. And the real leader is the person who helps us revive that God consciousness so that we can get out of this false conception of life. And come back to our healthy condition of God consciousness. So someone may say how to do that. And there are different ways. By study, by philosophy, by yoga, by sitting in different postures, by meditation, by pious deeds, by doing good things, by charity. By undergoing hardship. But our Vedic sages have taught that the easiest and most effective means for reviving our God consciousness is to chant the name of God. To chant and sing the holy name of God. The song we sang in the beginning, Krishna is the name of God. Rama is another name of God. And Hare addresses the energy of God. These are universal names. Krishna means all attractive. But God must be able to attract Hindus, Muslims, Christians, Jews, Americans, Indians, white, black, this, that, everybody. So he's all attractive. So Krishna is a universal name for God. So everyone can spiritually benefit by chanting or singing this name, Hare Krishna, or whatever name you find in your spiritual tradition. That vibration, that spiritual vibration purifies the mind. Purifies the mind. So that we can awaken to spiritual consciousness. So we invite you to take advantage of this chanting of Hare Krishna. If you have some other name, that's all right. You can chant that. Or even if you have some other name for God, you can chant this name also, Hare Krishna. And you'll find very quickly some good results. You can also take advantage of this literature. I'm only giving a little tiny sample today of some of the ideas from these books. But we've brought some books with us, and you can explore at greater length some of the very profound ideas from these books, and take advantage of the teachings that are there that will enable us to become spiritually qualified leaders, or to recognize spiritually qualified leaders. Because these are the real leaders of human society. These are the best leaders of human society. The ones who lead us to understand that we're not this body, that we're all spiritual living beings, and that we're all part of God. And I think I've said enough, and I should stop here and let you ask your questions that you might have. Is that all right? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It was really enlightening, wasn't it? Yeah? Thank you so much. So, one thing you should understand, you should have a misunderstanding. Krishna consciousness is not a religion. It's a science of the self. As Maharaj explained, it doesn't matter who you are. You may be atheist, you may be anybody. If you're intelligent, you can analyze this philosophy. It has nothing to do with religion. It's spirituality and religiosity. Maybe some similarity, but it's different if you really understand it deeply. So, no misunderstanding. We didn't come to convert people. We don't come to impose some religion on anyone. But it's a sense of self-realization. So, thank you very much. As Maharaj asked you, if you have a question, you can go ahead.
You have some written questions, or do you have a put your hand in the air question? What would you like? Okay. You have to be, I have a microphone and you don't, so you have to be real loud.
Yeah, I want to ask a question about when talking about the issue of leadership, I came to realize that part of the issue of being born. So I was thinking if you talk of ownership of something, it's like the properties of God. And I was saying that if actually this is the property of God, how about that leaders? How to become a leader of that area? And it belongs to God, or actually what is the source of these leaders?
I couldn't hear very well, could you?
We actually couldn't hear the question. Can you come forward, please? Don't worry.
Do we have a second microphone? Can we pass this one around?
So that everybody can hear you.
But this one has a long cord. I think I can send this back to
him. Come forward.
You'll see how far this will go. No, down this side. This side. He's over here.
Maharaj, there's an announcement. Anyone who asks a question will get a book for free.
Oh, okay. You can announce.
Anyone who's asked a very relevant question? Yes, a free book.
You qualify for a free book.
Okay, I was asking about the issue of the ownership of the property talked about. God owns. Like God has the property, and I was asking that what actually is the source of this leadership. Sometimes it comes about, people think that you are born with it, and I want actually you to explain clearly for me to understand. Maybe sometimes I'll say, if I wasn't born, it belongs to God, then I wouldn't bother becoming a leader. So And another one is the issue of talks of path as the problem. I was wondering, path.
Birth problem?
Yeah, path. You say path is one of the four problems. And then I was saying, what is wrong about path? And yet, path gave me life.
Let me see if I understood your question, first of all. You're asking about property. If someone's born with property, then how does that happen that someone has property, and how do we think this is my property? Is that your question? Is that right? I want to make sure I have your question right.
Someone is born in a wealthy family.
Yeah, someone's born in a wealthy family.
What makes him to be born in
a family? Yeah, what makes a person born in a wealthy family? Maybe all of us might like to be wealthy. We wouldn't mind being wealthy.
That's not the question, Maharaj.
That's not the question.
No. His question is, if once he knows that everything belongs to God, he has nothing, so why should he be inclined to become a leader? Is that the other question here?
Okay, everything belongs to God, why should I become a leader?
Yeah.
I should become a leader to help people understand that they're all thieves, they've all stolen God's property, and that they're all suffering on that account. You just suppose I'm in a group of people and we're holding on to something that's not ours. And we're going to get in trouble for it. We're already in trouble for it, because that's not mine. I have to hide it. I have to have somebody always standing by the door to make sure that nobody's coming. But if you're a real leader, if you're the most honest leader, the best leader, person who has vision, you say, wait, I have a different idea. Instead of posting this guy by the door and that guy by the window and making sure we always have a car in the back so that we can get out real quick, why don't we give it back? We're making ourselves, we're leading a crazy life. Always in fear, always in anxiety. Suppose we give it back. Isn't that better? Suppose we become honest. Isn't that a better idea? That makes you very radical in that group of thieves. But it's the right understanding. Somehow they've gotten the wrong idea that by holding on to someone else's property, I'll be happy. And it doesn't work. They may go to jail, or else they're always living in fear. So, everything belongs to God. And you can become a very, the leader, the real leaders, spiritual leaders, were radical leaders. They didn't just say, you're keeping it in your right pocket, why don't you keep it in your left pocket? They said that everything, now, if everything belongs to God, now what does that mean? Does it mean I throw this microphone away, I find an altar somewhere, and, whatever money I have, whatever food I have, whatever machines I have, I say, okay, now I know it's not mine, I'm going to give it to the church, or give it to the mosque, or I'm going to throw it on an altar. No, that's part of the science of self-realization. If everything belongs to God, everything should be used for God. It doesn't mean I throw it away, I say, this isn't mine, so now I can't touch it. But I should use it for God, just like I could use this microphone for some material purpose. I could sing a song about love, or I could ask you to give me some money so that I'll be a happy man. But instead, I can use it to speak about God. So then in that way, you become a leader. You say, every one of us has something. We have microphones, we have some money, we have some intelligence. We have some assets. We can use that for the service of God. Our country can use its assets. Our family can use its assets. I myself can use whatever I have. in the service of God, and then I'll be happy. I'm trying to use it for myself, but the more I try to use it for myself, the more I become frustrated. That's actually the way it works. But when I use it for God, then I'll be happy. That's your number one question. Your number two question. Is that all right? Okay, your number two question. What's wrong with birth? Without birth, we can't get here. Here's what's wrong with birth. This body is a foreign thing to me. I think, how could it be a foreign thing? This body is, you know, like, I wake up with it every day. I go to sleep with it every day. How is it a foreign thing? But it is. Because as a spark of consciousness, as a soul, I'm eternal. But my body is temporary. As a soul, I have no miseries. You can't cut me, you can't break me, you can't shoot me, you can't do anything to me. But my body, so many things can happen. Every inch of it can be subjected to pain, subjected to problems, right? The body becomes the source of all sorts of miseries. And actually, the body is not something I'm meant to have. In the spiritual world, or the kingdom of God, no one has a temporary body that gets old and dies and gets thrown into the grave. There may be forms there. I may have a shape, but not a temporary shape. So birth means birth into birth and death. Right? What's wrong with birth? Death is what's wrong with birth. If being born didn't mean that I'd have to die, birth would be fine. But it's like a coin. You can't say, I'll just take the head side, I won't take the tail side. Death comes along with birth. And old age and disease come along with birth. So if I can get free from having to be born once again in this material world, if I can get free from this cycle of birth and death and return to the kingdom of God, then all my problems are solved. So therefore, birth is not desirable. Or, now that I've got this birth, this is a very special birth. There's so many chickens born every day, so many cows, so many donkeys. But we have birth as human beings. Now what should I do with this human birth? It's a very valuable opportunity. This opportunity should be used for spiritual realization. Is that okay? Okay, who else might have a question? Yes, this girl right here. Shall I pass you the microphone?
When he's born, he's not born again, so then does that mean?
Yes.
So she understood that we're not the body, that we're the soul or consciousness within the body. And now the question is, if I'm not born again, does that mean that consciousness doesn't exist anymore, that I don't exist, that I'm finished? Is that your question? Yeah. No, not at all. Just the opposite. Just like now, if I'm in prison, when I get free from prison, it doesn't mean I no longer exist, but it means now I'm in freedom. Or if I'm in the hospital and now I'm diseased. So it's not that when I'm out of the hospital, now I'm dead. But now, rather, I have my healthy life. Well, birth and death is like a symptom of unhealthy existence. It's not our healthy condition. Healthy condition is to be living eternally. And all the religions of the world will tell us that there's a kingdom of God, that you can go there, and then you don't lose your individual your individuality, your identity, but you're in your pure identity, your eternal identity, your identity in relationship with God. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. And someone else had a question. Okay, I picked on you and your maroon dress, so would you ask a question?
Okay, so you said that leadership is a leadership, there are different types of leaders, leaders we have the duty leaders, we have leaders who, those are the leaders. And say that if leaders, you say that there is connected to God, yes. That is, if there are leaders, that is the church leaders connected to God and they receive a vision from God. What about the leaders? Right? They receive a vision from God also. And their is their leadership related to God for the other leaders for the republic, like the MPs, the president.
If I understood you, of course the church leaders have to understand their relationship with God, but what about the other leaders like the president, the MP, or any other kind of leader? Am I right? They should especially, their very first qualification is that they should be self-realized. They should understand that I'm a spirit soul, that I'm not this body. I'll just give you a practical example in politics. In so many of the countries of Africa, there's been centuries of discrimination on the basis of this body. Right? By people who don't understand that the body is just the dress. But the person within the body is the same, whether in a black body or a white body or a Chinese body or this body or that body. But because they misunderstand or they don't understand that first principle, so then they're discriminating. This is a black person. This is a white person. It's as if I were to say, this is a maroon person. This is a green person. This is a yellow person.
Tribals.
They're missing.
Tribes.
Tribal misunderstanding. All on the basis of the body. So the tribal leader or the political leader or the social leader, his first principle of understanding should be that I'm not the body, I'm soul, I'm servant of God, and all human beings are. Not that I see these are my friends, these are my enemies. Not that I see this is mine and this is theirs. I see that everything and everyone belongs to God, and we're all spiritual living beings. The MPs should understand that. I met an MP the other day, I don't even tell you what I thought of him. But he wasn't a self-realized person. He could understand that from as soon as he opened his mouth. You should insist that if you want to stand, because otherwise they think I'm this body and life is meant for sense gratification. So you elect them and then they exploit you. They look for different ways to take your money and benefit themselves or their families or their special interest group at the expense of others. Because they think, I'm only going to be here for a few years, let me get as much out of it as I can. And they don't understand that I'm servant of God, and if I'm servant of the people, I should be leading them in such a way that they live in harmony with God's arrangement. God has arranged for the happiness of every living being, for the needs of every living being, even in this material world. He arranges enough of everything. But your leaders mismanage it, and then you're in shortage. So first thing, your ordinary leaders, your secular leaders, should be self-realized persons.
doesn't matter, Christian, Hindu, Muslim, that they should be self-realized. Someone else had a question that you would give. Yes.
What you told us, like, a leader is born, but also a second made,
yeah?
A leader can also be made out of somebody who is nothing, yeah? We can see somebody, a criminal, coming into a national leader. And what I was asking, what does it take to form somebody into an exalted leader? Like, now you are a leader, we see you, so you see some qualities in you. How have you come to Google to say, what challenges have you faced, and how do you overcome them?
How do we become leaders? Someone may say, well, a leader is born or a leader is made. And it's true, actually, that some people will always, you know, be up front and other people will follow. That's natural. Put 50 people in a room, they won't all lead, otherwise we have chaos. But everyone can lead within his own sphere. You know, someone leads his family, someone leads a country. But everyone leads someone. The real qualification for being a leader is to be a follower. The real qualification for being a leader is to be a follower. And the secret is to follow the right person. We're all following. We follow some politician, or we follow some philosopher, we follow some people that we look up to. Everyone's following. But if you follow the great souls, if you follow the self-realized persons, then you become the best leader. Whether you become the leader of your family, or the leader of your country, or the leader of your friends, if you're a person who knows the science of self-realization, you become a very good leader. And we learn that science by following those who know it. Is that okay? Good. Way in the back, we have a question. I think, do you want to come up to the front? Or do you want to be real loud? You have a choice.
Funny enough.
I was
asking, how can one get relationship so that they can feel like, you know, the simple process of being born, going to school,
You started out loud and I heard, but maybe you want to come up a little bit? So, can make, why don't we just halfway?
Okay, he's coming all the way up. Thank you.
Don't put that to speak.
Keep away from the
okay, my question was, how can one get enlightenment so that they can start seeing life beyond the simple process of being born, right, going to a good school, having a good family, and finally death?
Okay. Great.
How can one attain enlightenment so that he can go beyond this life of just being born and having a family and a job and then dying? The easiest method, the most recommended method, is the simple singing of this transcendental sound of the name of God. Practical method. It's like taking a bath. You know, you just pour the water and the dirt starts to go. So there's external cleanliness. You know, we bathe our body, and then there's internal cleanliness. We bathe our mind. This singing of Hare Krishna or any name of God is the best process for purifying the mind. And when the mind is purified, you become self-realized. When you become self-realized, you can get a free conversion. For those who want more philosophy, more understanding of the principles behind it, we have so many books. We have a library with our books. But even if a person doesn't want to read any books, or doesn't matter, if we take to the simple method of chanting the holy name of God, singing the holy name of God, mind will be very pure. Okay.
I have an opinion and a question, asking that one. Now about property. You spoke of property, you're born and you get a good job, you acquire some property, put up a nice house and get a nice car. Now, in my opinion, I think the difference between ownership and possession is the answer to the question. Because ultimately, it all belongs to God. That's from a religious perspective. It all belongs to God. But when I'm born into this life and I, through my hard work or through some other means, I manage to acquire some property, then it's in my possession, so it's mine. So ultimately, God is the owner, but it's in my possession. That's my opinion. Now, the question will arise from what he said.
Is it on the second thing?
No, that was my opinion. No, I have a question.
Okay, let me speak to the opinion first, and then we'll take the question. That's okay.
You're making a distinction between property and possession. Everything is God's property, but now it's in my possession. So then I say it's mine. So conventionally we can say, well, this is mine, this is my surety. I don't have to go through contortion and say, well, this is really God's surety. But I understand that actually it is God's property. And that it's in my possession means that it's on loan. So suppose, now this is your book, if you give me this book, it's on loan, it's still your book, it's still your property, even though it's in my possession. So I have to take care of it, because I know I have to return it to you, and I have to use it in a way according to the way you would want me to use it. You don't want me marking in your book, you don't want me tearing the pages. So I agree with you that it's in my possession. But since it's God's property, it's still not mine. It's just on loan to me. And that's okay. God is loaning us so much. Then we should use what's been loaned to us in the right way for His service. Now your question.
My question arises from what you said, and I want to understand the nexus between religion and spirituality, the difference between religion and spirituality. And if I may ask a personal question, what is your religion?
What is
your religion, Pastor?
My religion. Okay.
So he was making a distinction that actually not between leadership and spirituality, but between religion and spirituality, right? That someone may say, well, who are you? And you say, well, I'm a Christian. Who are you? I'm Muslim. Who are you? I'm Hindu. And that's a certain, you know, everybody belongs to a certain religion or atheism. They have their own beliefs. But that can change. I can convert to Christianity or convert to Islam. It's not permanent in that way. But there's a permanent essence of all those religions, and that's spirituality. I'm a soul, whether I'm Christian or Hindu or Muslim or atheist. When the body dies, consciousness leaves the body, regardless of what religion I belong to. No matter whether I go to a church or a mosque or something else. So that religion is one thing, but you can say in one sense that spirituality is the larger principle. So we're not so much concerned with this religion or that religion. We have members from all different religions. We have Christians, we have Muslims, we have Jews, we have some Jains, some Sikhs, some all sorts of, you know, people who came from atheistic backgrounds. But that doesn't really, that's not what we're focused on. We're not trying to change people. Now you belong to this religion, now you should join that religion. But we should, there are common spiritual principles that belong to everyone, that belong to every religion, that everyone should, you know, can take advantage of. Or that people from every religion can take advantage of to get deeper understanding. Knowledge is not, just like knowledge. I may be Christian, I may be Hindu, I may be something else, but I want knowledge. Knowledge is not Christian or Hindu or Muslim. Knowledge is knowledge. Like gold. We don't say this is South African gold and this is Russian gold. Gold is gold. So knowledge is knowledge and spirituality is common.
spread over the floor, universal, applies for everyone.
Did we have another question that someone wanted to ask?
You say that as human beings we have four big problems. That was bad, disease, death, and old age.
Yes.
But to me, something like a disease, these other three are quite uncontrollable beyond human control. So a disease is something that you can control. Now, how does it qualify to be among the four big problems?
You can't control old age, death, or birth, but disease we can control. So how does it become one of the four big problems? It becomes one of the four big problems because all you can do with disease is switch which one you'll have. Right? You can't say, I'm going to stop disease. Maybe you can say, I'll stop yellow fever. Maybe you can say, I'm going to stop AIDS. Suppose now there's a big AIDS epidemic. And let's say we put all of our scientific energy into it and we wipe out AIDS. The next one will follow. There'll just be another disease. So it's one of the four big problems because I may get free from this disease or that disease, just like death. Not everybody gets run over by a car. Some people die of poisoning, some people die of disease, some people die in traffic accidents, some people die in war. Maybe you can change which way you die. If you don't go to war, you won't die in war. But you might get run over by a truck. If you stay at home so that you're not in traffic, you'll die some other way. So disease is the same way. It's just a question of which one's going to get you. We have some other question. Yes.
Maybe before I end my question, I will comment my lesson on the few things that you are discussing. First of all, you have talked about leadership, and I have given some of the qualities for leadership. So my question is, because of your topical discussion in terms of self-realization, how has science been inculcated in this context?
How is
science being inculcated in this context?
Science.
We talked about leadership and we talked about spirituality. So how does science fit into this context? Science means some laws of understanding that are common to everyone. Or science can be looked at differently. But one way is science wants to understand the laws of nature. What goes up must come down. To every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. E equals mc squared. There's some laws of nature. The sum of the angles and so on. These are all laws of nature. But they're only covering the material world. They're only covering the body, or matter. We say matter under such conditions will do this, right? You put heat under a liquid and send it up to a certain temperature, and the liquid will boil depending on what kind of liquid it is. So these are laws of nature, but they only pertain to matter. But the world is not just matter. The world is a combination of matter and consciousness, or matter and spirit. If you consider yourself, you're not just matter. Your body is matter. It acts according to material laws. But consciousness is different. You're a conscious person. Your consciousness is not acting just according to material laws. There's a different set of laws for consciousness or for life, for the living energy. So as there's a science for understanding matter, we should also inquire
about consciousness or about this spirit. Okay, do you have a question back here?
Short this go on answer your question.
She wants to know about Krishna. Thank you very much. As I mentioned, Krishna is a name of God, so it denotes the supreme being or the supreme person. And this name Krishna means all attractive. What makes a person attractive? A person is attractive if he's beautiful, right? A beautiful person attracts us. A famous person attracts us. If some very famous person were to come here, we'd all be interested. Wealth is attractive. Some people get married for money. People run for office to get money. So then a person who has money is attractive in some way. Beauty and strength is attractive. A person is very strong. He's attractive. Beauty, wealth, fame, strength, knowledge is attractive. A person may not be very beautiful or very wealthy, but if that person has knowledge, that person is attractive. And detachment is attractive. If a person can live without attachments, if he can live without caring about depending on things, he's detached. That's attractive too. You're saints who live without material possessions. So someone is beautiful, but someone else is more beautiful, and then someone else is still more beautiful. Someone has wealth, but someone else has more wealth. And someone more wealth than that person. And so it is with fame, with knowledge, with attachment. When you get to the person who has the maximum, the most beauty, the most wealth, the most fame, the most strength, the most detachment, that person is all attractive. He can attract the most beautiful person, the most famous, the most strong, because he's all, he has everything, the most, that's God. So Krishna means the person who has all beauty, all fame, all knowledge, all strength, all wealth, and all renunciation. So this is the name of God. And you'll find from the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavad Gita is spoken by Krishna. And Krishna comes to this world from time to time. God comes to this world from time to time. So Krishna personally came so that you could find out more about him. And our books tell you a lot about Krishna. Okay. Good. Okay?
You can choose it.
Please, I know you've been, sitting for a long time, some of you are hungry, but don't worry, shortly you're going to have nice sumptuous food, lunch, and you'll enjoy it. So, don't leave before that, okay?
Should we set a cut? Should we go like another 10 minutes or something? Should we cut a time so they're not sitting? Okay.
Yeah.
I think we'll answer just a couple of more questions so that, you know, you must have some sort of a schedule, some sort of a time, and I'm sensitive to not wanting to take up all your time, and you may also be hungry. So I'll just take a couple of more questions, and then we'll go on to our next programs. And we'll stay here, so if you still have questions that you want to ask me, or that you want to ask any of us, just feel free to come right up and ask us. Is that good? Okay.
question is, on the flyer, you wrote that you are related with Isaac and Iskod. So I just want to know what it means by Isaac and Iskod in both. Isaac and Iskod.
Isaac.
She has a question. What is Isaac and what is ISKCON? I'll answer the second question. ISKCON means International Society for Krishna Consciousness. International Society for Krishna Consciousness. That's ISKCON. Isaac, I don't really know. I think Isaac is one of your something here, locally. Do you know what Isaac is? Okay, I'm going to have to ask the same question to try and find out what Isaac is.
Professor.
Okay, my question is, you're saying the science of self-realization.
Yes.
No, my question, are you basing on psychology? Like someone understanding herself and knowing the qualities she has and fight for the leadership or something that people can see in you and say that this is what being a leader is to us. That's how I think that it is a personal one, if you don't mind. To me, I would like to know your denomination and your ego because you are kind of.
Okay.
Is this science have to do with psychology? No. This is a higher science than psychology. Psychology has to do with the mind. But higher than the mind is the soul. We have a science of water, we have science of earth, we have science that has to do with fire, we have science that has to do with electricity, and you have a science that has to do with the mind. And now here's a science that has to do with consciousness or the soul. Oh, what religion? What denomination? I come from a Jewish background. What denomination do you come from?
Christian.
Christian. Hindu. Christian. One more. Christian. Okay.
We're one atheist.
So the Christians are in the majority. There's one Jew and one Hindu. Okay. There was another question. Okay. Mr. Blue Shirt, U.S. Open.
I was asking about this question concerning that for the junior session book when it talks about if you want to be a leader, it says that you cannot be a leader if you don't have inspiration and you have to have inspiration so as you can be a leader. Is it inside or you can just be a leader? And where does the inspiration have to come from?
Yes.
If you don't have a lead inspiration, you can't be a leader. You'll just sit there and wait for something to happen. A leader needs inspiration. So where is the leader getting his inspiration? Actually, every leader gets his inspiration from God. But most leaders don't know it. They just think, I'm inspired by this, or I'm inspired by that. But actually, God is within the heart of everyone. And without God, you can't get inspiration. He's giving inspiration. He's giving inspiration according to what we want. Someone wants to be the leader of a labor union. Someone wants to be a leading scientist. So God gives him inspiration. But if you want to be a God-conscious leader, if you want to be a leader in self-realization, then directly God will inspire you in that way. God is by nature inspiring. If we're inspired by money, we're inspired by fame, we're inspired by some political idea, these are all small things compared to God. If these things are inspiring, what to speak of God? You come in touch with God, you'll be the most inspired. Or you come in touch with the name of God, because there's no difference between God and the sound of His name. Just chant Hare Krishna, you'll feel inspiration. That's a fact. Okay,
Let's follow your question.
one question. From the camp of liberation, I've seen that there is a big camp. So does that big camp mean that you believe in reincarnation?
Sorry. Apologies for that. Seeing the picture, he's asking whether we believe in reincarnation. And the answer is yes, the picture is illustrating reincarnation. Those who have the book, you can see that the body is changing from the body of a baby to the body of a child, to the body of a young man, to the body of an old man. But there's a little spark, which is the spark of consciousness, or the soul, which is traveling through all those bodies. You had a child's body, you have a young man's body, you'll travel to an old man's body, and then that body will die, and where will you go? But again, there's another body. Okay. Shall we take one more question? Okay, this lady, ready? She's asked about this book, big book we have called Bhagavad Gita. Where is that from? There it is. Is it a Bible or an inspirational book? Well, this is a book of spiritual understanding. It's not just an usually by an inspirational book we mean sort of some like some stories that get us inspired. It's more than that. And I wouldn't compare it just to the Bible, but this is a book of spiritual knowledge. Yes. You have something to follow. Why not? Yeah, these books are meant for you. If you don't take them, we have to bring them back home with us. And that would be silly. So everyone, please come, take interest in our books. We have so much to share with you. Please take advantage of the books. This chanting you can take home with you. You can chant this mantra, sing this prayer wherever you go. There's no charge, it's open for everyone. Try it. Take advantage of the opportunity to spend time with those of us who've come today. Ask any other questions you might have. We're at your service. And I think there'll be some ongoing activities here on this campus. Some of the young men have shown an interest in this science of spiritual realization. So you could look for, I think that's what Isaac may have to do with that, I'm quite sure. But you can look for more programs of this type here. And when you're sometimes in Mombasa, if you're coming to Mombasa, we have a center there where you can also find out more. Nairobi, if you're journeying to Nairobi, we have a center there. I think the addresses are in our books. So take it to Kisumu also. Kisumu is the nearest. Yeah, so you can take advantage of Kisumu. We have a center there. Our books are available and you can find out more. Would you like to chant again, as we did at the beginning? Shall we sing one more time? A few minutes before we break up?
Yes.
Okay. So I'll give things back to Nri Hari. And he's shaking his head no. So we're not going to sing again. But
if they come to our center.
But if you come wherever we are, you can sing with us, or you can sing this mantra, or this Yeah, it's called a mantra. Actually, a mantra means a sound that frees the mind. So you can take advantage of this sound that frees the mind. Take it home with you. There are no hard and fast rules. It's not for a particular religion, but it will give you clarity of mind and clarity of purpose. So whatever religion you are, whatever science you're studying, this will help make you a better leader. It's for everyone. Okay? Thank you all very much. And thank you to the administration who gone through considerable trouble to provide the logistics for us. Thank you very much for providing this opportunity for us.
Say a few more words.
Good afternoon. It was a long talk and we really enjoyed it for those. Okay, I don't know your expectations, what you expected of today's talk, but I really want to encourage all of you that just take whatever you could, be as objective as possible, be open-minded, and I'm sure you might have gone with some piece of knowledge from our distinguished visitors today. Just a point of information, ISEC is a non-political organization. It's non-religious, it's not for profit, and our main objective is we do exchange programs. So our visitors today just visited, and we hope maybe that one day, okay, we don't know, but we are not yet affiliated with them in any way. But we just love the words of wisdom that we get from our visitors, and we just love to hear from what other people have to say, okay? So don't worry about the race, don't worry about the colors, about how we dress or how anyone else dresses. Just try as much as possible. I'm happy for those who've taken the content, because that's the most important thing, yeah? The information is the most important thing, and whoever is presenting it, it doesn't really matter, yeah? What really matters the most is the information that you get from these people. So I thank you so much, delighted to have you guys in this minute. And I really believe that you've learned from your heart, you've understood something. Please pass on the message to the rest. Give them the points of information that you got or the pieces of knowledge that you got from the rest of the people. So lunch is ready. Just going to be served outside there. And feel free, for those who want to pick a few books, they're also here at the corner. So enjoy yourselves, and I really believe that you're going to have a nice time. So I want to call this meeting to come. Thank you.
We will end on behalf of Ken Boy. We honestly, deeply acknowledge his favor for allowing us to have you here, to have this